What is a hero? Every person is faced with a moment in their life where they have to choose to run from adversity or stand in its path and face it head on. That question could not be more clear than 9/11, when our first responders were met with an impossible choice: to run into burning buildings when everyone else was running away. And yet for them, it wasn't a choice. That moment came, and without question, without a moment's hesitation, they ran toward the fire, toward the danger, toward sacrifice. 2,977 lives were taken that day, 413 of which were first responders. 343 were firefighters. We honor you. 60 were police officers. We honor you. 8 were emergency medical technicians. We honor you. And the rest, 2,564, were mothers, fathers, daughters, sons, brothers, and sisters. In a day of tragedy, we saw more clear than ever what it means to be a hero. And we will never forget. God bless their sacrifice. And God bless America.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Red Lens, and it starts right now.
I am Chris Von Erich. Come on, Franklin. That's hot. Are you serious? If you walk around looking like that, you deserve it. I got something to say about that. This is The Red Lens.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Chris Von Erich, and this is The Red Lens. It is Thursday night. It is a momentous night here as we get into something that is very personable to myself and to my partner, Franklin, who is sitting the opposite of me. What is up, my man? How are you tonight?
I'm doing all right, Chris. I had a pretty good week today, despite the anniversary of probably the main focus of the show. But, we're carrying on. Back to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the reason why I'm kind of doing it's not so much going to be like a tribute kind of thing that I'm going to do, but I do want to kind of talk about myself in terms of what I was doing on 9/11. And we didn't get a chance to do this about three or four days ago when, you know, everybody was doing stuff. But I wanted to kind of chime in about it. Because, again, we live in New York, stone's throw away from Manhattan, and it did affect us. It affected a lot of people that I know that some people I know worked there, and some, you know, one of my very good friends had some business to do there that particular morning, and he just didn't get around to getting in there. He was, you know, late doing his regular duties, and he never got there. And, you know, good for him that he didn't, because where he needed to report to was definitely above that floor level of, I think, like the 76th floor. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you were on that floor, you didn't get out on that day. So he was one of the lucky ones in terms of being delayed. So for myself, I'll say that that particular day, I was actually starting my career in the career that is my primary career out in the real world. And it was very surreal because the company that I was working for, the item that we were producing was actually cards that you put into your computer to actually watch television. Okay, so this is, we're going way back. We're going, again, to 20 some odd years back here. And it was a big thing to have, be able to actually just watch TV through your PC. And one of my coworkers had one of these on in his computer, and he remarked to me that, oh, well, you know, I can't believe it, but this guy just flew a plane into the World Trade Center. And not thinking anything of it, not thinking in the scope of what was about to be reality, I basically was like, well, geez, you know, what, somebody with a prop plane, you know, you got off course and, you know, clipped the, you know, whatever, the side of it or something.
Corey Lytle version 2.0, I guess.
Yeah, basically. But no, it turned out that it was literally a 747. And I, you know, I saw it on the screen there that it was burning away, and we were like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. You know, do they know anything about it? And in our conversation, literally 10 minutes later, we see the live feed of the second plane going into the second tower. And that's when, like, everybody lost it in the office. Everybody
realized that it wasn't an accident.
It wasn't an accident. This was not a one-off thing. And, you know, then reports of, you know, of other people, like, getting phone calls from other concerned family members saying that, you know, they believe it was a hijacking. They believe that there's more than these planes involved. And lo and behold, there sure as heck was. There was another plane, actually two more. One goes into the Pentagon building. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they were actually en route to go to the White House. That was like their, you know, that was their second goal, you know, to hit that too. So that was, at that point, you know, we didn't know what was going on. We thought, oh, how many planes do they actually have? That was the thing that was concerning to all of us. What was your memory of that day?
Well, I myself was just leaving my dentist's office, and you know, with my job, I have a company vehicle. I can take it home. So I'm leaving my dentist's office, and I'm going straight from the dentist to work, and tuning around the radio, listening to music and things like that. And I forget what station it was, probably AM radio, knowing me. They had mentioned that, you know, an airplane had crashed into one of the towers. And I thought exactly the same thing. He was like, you idiot. What are you doing? You know, and I'm listening. And then, like you said, 10 minutes later, 8 minutes later, it happens again. Mm-hmm. So I turned around and went to my firehouse, my old firehouse. And I just walked in, and there were 15 other guys standing around with their gear, because they apparently were smarter than me, and they realized that this was something serious, and they thought they might have gotten called and head in. So at that time, I called my boss, and he goes, I don't care where you are, get into the office. So I got into my Jeep and then went to the office. And at that time, plans were made to restore. I'm in telecommunications, and to restore the phone systems that were down for communications, because one of our offices is actually just a few blocks away, which was just devastated, and there was no communication in that part of town. So we knew what we had to do, and sadly, that's the beginning for me.
Wow. So now, were you called in to work or service that downtown area?
I was. I was only there for 2 days, and I had a view of the pile, as it was called.
Wow.
And I was able to see it, and during my off time, I did, try to help out. I mean, there was a lot of overtime involved and like that, but I did try to help out as much as I can, and it was pretty devastating. I had never seen a pile of anything that big before, regardless of what it was. I had never seen a pile of anything that big before. And knowing what had happened, it was surreal.
Yeah.
And then after that, we got transferred to Brooklyn. And so, sadly, going over the bridge and where we were stationed, we had a view of where the towers used to be.
Wow.
And I've been living in New York all my life, and that's a skyline that you just don't forget.
Right.
And when you looked, the only thing you could say to yourself is, wait, where are the towers? Where were they yesterday? Where are they now? And it was just a big plume. There was a big plume of smoke against and dust and asbestos or whatever else was down there, against all the searchlights and all the emergency lights that were there. It was it still hadn't sunk in yet, to tell you the truth, Chris. It still hadn't sunk in. And to tell you the truth, there are times when, and I love the city, anybody knows me knows I love the city, there are times when I'm driving, walking, what have you, driving right past where the towers were, still can't believe they're not there. I sometimes still think, you come around a corner, there are just two big towers. They're not there anymore. And there are times when I just can't believe that, the mighty towers that were there are no longer there.
Jeez. For those who were not alive, and that's, we're going to talk about,
that
contingent of people and how I think that is a reflection of kind of our second segment that we're going to get into in terms of how I think things have changed or may not have changed since then, since the 20 years. But if you weren't there or you didn't experience it, you didn't live through it, there are people that say that, Pearl Harbor changed my life, changed my outlook on things, that generation back then. And I think for a lot of us, we never understood the gravity of something like that. Okay. Now, there's a lot of people that say this, and I believe it's true, that while that was devastating and that was something that propelled us into war, much like 9/11 did, it was not, I mean, it was on our soil per se, but it wasn't this. And to have this happen was something where basically our ideals of where we were in the world, how we were in the world, how we felt protected in the world, was really shattered. And I think that that was a big thing for myself, for a lot of people that lived through that. And we're growing up through that, and something that will always be part of you. And it's one of those, do you remember where you were moments in history and life? So I do want to.
That was our Pearl Harbor.
It was, yes. Yes, and I should have followed that up with saying, for us, that is my generation, a lot of generations, maybe the Gen X, Gen Y generations, Pearl Harbor. Absolutely. And I just don't want to tell people that, look, if you want to share your memory of where you were that day or your feelings. The phone lines are open, 224-231-4652. You see the number down below. Feel free to call in. And what I might do too is I might throw the link in the chat to the live stream, and you can do that as well, and share your thoughts on that, and maybe share your thoughts about the other segment that we have coming up here too. So you can do that as well. As a matter of fact, I will do that right now. I'll copy it to the clipboard, and we'll throw that in there for you guys. So if you want to call, you can. And if you want to pop in to share your 9/11 experience, memories, you can do that. Let's see. Also, if you have not yet subscribed, please do that. The Red Lens. Twitter, it is The Red Lens One. Also on Facebook, we are streaming. We are on Instagram and on MGTOW.TV at The Red Lens. So you can get us on those formats as well. Let's see. We have Mighty Zane. History taught nowadays, if not pushes today's agenda and narrative, is sadly swept under the rug. Yes, it is. 9/11 and what happened that day is swept under the rug. And we'll get into that too, because I was appalled at this one thing I saw online where, I don't know if she was Middle Eastern or not, but she was dressed kind of in that way. And she was a teacher at some school in Virginia, and she was teaching a lesson about 9/11 and kind of being very dismissive of it. Saying like, well, you know, we shouldn't talk about the details of it because the details don't matter. It doesn't matter what the background of the, and she wouldn't even call them terrorists. You know, the people, she said, she was very generic, that, you know, did what they did kind of to us. And I took a personal affront to that. It was disgusting. And if you're not going to teach about what happened that day in a concise, real manner, then you might as well, I would rather you not say it. Okay. Much like a lot of our servicemen, they say, look, if you don't have something good to say about people who serve or what we're doing, rather you say nothing at all than to speak, you know, ill or out of your ass, basically, when it comes to the service people fighting for the country like that.
Something I wish I had done is join any branch of the service. Probably not a week goes by where I think about it. You know, 'cause I know a lot of, you know, people my age have, you know, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, and I never joined up. You know, I never enlisted, which I feel it was a mistake. It was definitely a mistake, because I think everybody should.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've been, you know, I've hinted to this a lot of times on the show here. Growing up a child of a police officer, being the in a family of five, in terms of my family as it is here, it's shocking that none of us took to that profession. Sure. I kind of, you know, again, talking about back when I was young enough to do it, it would have been interesting to maybe really think about doing that and getting involved in that. And I sometimes think of that myself.
Not even the reserves. I mean, you could have joined the reserves, you know, just to fulfill, you know, to your debt to the country. But there are things that I just didn't think of it.
Florida Jeff says, unfortunately, our country is more at risk now than 20 years ago due to our country's reckless, incompetent political ruling class. Yeah, it is a you-know-what show. when it comes to that.
Fecal matter show?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I get in, before we delve into that aspect of it, I do want to share another another video that I thought was quite impactful. And this comes from, speaking of military service, a Navy SEAL from Nebraska who did a video, which I think is pretty commendable. He wanted to do something to pay tribute to the people that did do what they had to do on 9/11. So we're going to take a look at that right now. And let me just bring it up here. I got to share it again. Share the screen, play the video. Here we go. Here we are. All right, and I'm going to blow this up. Hopefully it does take the full screen like it tells me it's going to. Let's go here. Here we go.
There you go.
Oop. Nope. Hold on. Is it going to play? Don't make a fool out of me. I think it's buffering. Yes, no, maybe so.
Uh-oh. Not for nothing. My internet's been kind of goofy this whole week as well. Oh, there it goes. Yeah.
I think this is the interview. I don't want to do the interview yet.
Oh, okay.
I want to play this. Oh, here we go.
Here it goes.
This is where these winding roads have led.
Oh, oh.
I can see a day of gold ahead.
I do see the call. We'll get to you right after this video.
Can't be done, impossible, they've said. But I'll get there. I'll get there.
I will rise up. I will not fall. I will stand up. I will not fall. I will stay strong. I'm never giving up faith. I will go on. Go on.
Moments come for me to stand.
Oh, oh.
There in glory with my heart in hand.
Oh, oh.
I always dreamed that someday I could be here. I'm here now.
I will rise up. I will not.
There you go.
Moving. Very moving.
Very, very, very moving. And
done well. Very good.
Yes.
Done well.
Yes. Very much so. All right. So let's get to this first call here. Somebody on the phone wants to chime in about their memories or their thoughts. So let's get to them right now. Hey, you're on. This is Von Erich. What is up?
Hi, good evening, Chris and Franklin. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, man.
Doing okay.
Good. So my name is Carl. I'm from Florida. I'm a first time caller, a long time listener.
Great.
Sure. And I wanted to chime in on this evening's discussion. I myself was a millennial. When the whole tragedy happened, I was a freshman in high school. I remember that day very well. We were actually in the cafeteria when one of the administrators brought in television, and they were showing us like what just happened on the news. And, you know, throughout the day, people were talking about the tragedy that happened, and we were trying to make sense of it. But the sad part, you know, about all of it is, you know, now 20, 21 years later, you know, people do remember it, but no one really talks about it or even reflects on it to the point where it should be reflected on, because, you know, what happened that day is really a huge part of American history, you know, and there are a lot of lessons to be learned as well, such as, you know, people say that we shouldn't take every day like there is a guaranteed tomorrow. So that's one thing that has always stuck to me, because even though I'm in my 30s, and, you know, and a lot of men and women our age think that, you know, there's always a tomorrow, but we never know for sure. So,
you know,
I just wanted to put that out there.
No, absolutely. And that's a great point, because one of the things I spoke about before, where it kind of puts puts everything into perspective, where you kind of go through life thinking, okay, it's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's next week, it's next month, and you keep going and going and going, and you think tomorrow is always there for you, and something like 9/11 comes around, and it kind of shocks you back into reality, saying like, no, it's not, you know, because all those people that were on those planes, all those people that went to work that day, they had plans for that night. They had plans for the next day. Hell, they had plans for family occasions, you know, months down the road. But just as you just said, that next day is not guaranteed. So that's a tremendous observation by you. And thank you for calling in. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Andrew, gentlemen, have a good night. Thank you once again.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Tremendous, tremendous call there, Colin. And thank you again for that. And, you know, like I said, Franklin, he was, 100%, you know, right on that. You know, tomorrow is not, you know, is not promised.
It's not promised
to anybody. And, you know, again, that doesn't mean go out there and go friggin' nuts, you know, like, you know, go out and, you know, have unsafe sex. Go ahead. No, don't do that. Maybe if you can try to get away with it, you do that. But, you know, it's good to keep things in perspective. So I think that's good. And again, what did you think of that video?
Right? It was quite moving, I'll tell you. I enjoyed the small town feel of it. You know, something that a bunch of, you know, people from, you know, small town got together, and the homespun feeling of it, I should say.
Yeah.
That's what really, you know, brought it together. And then you know, with the firemen, the police officers, first responders, police, you know, and then leading down the street and then into the actual football stadium, that really, that made it all, just moved it all together.
Yeah.
You know, brought it all together.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I did want to touch on, and again, we talked about, you just mentioned it earlier, there could be guys that have no idea what we're talking about, or maybe they read it in a textbook and they're like, well, you know, what the hell really happened? You know, what really happened that day? Well, you know, very simply, in a, you know, very quick synopsis, you know, it happened on September 11th in the morning, where members of that Al-Qaeda Islamic militant faction hijacked the four planes that we know of. And basically, the two of them went into both towers. A third one found its way to the Pentagon building, which a lot of people forget about that. They forget that the third plane actually did hit a target that it, you know, that it was aiming for, and that was the Pentagon, which is pretty much what houses a lot of our strategic kind of military governmental think tanks.
That's a think tank.
You know, like, what, you know, they kind of mull over, you know, what everybody's kind of doing and the different branches of the military and, you know, make those decisions thereof, therein, I should say. But the fourth plane was actually headed towards the White House. And if it not for a group of, again, we talk about these military people. If it wasn't for this group of military guys on the plane, you know, that happened just by happen circumstance, be on the plane. You know, the hijackers got up, said, you know, this is what we're doing. You know, we'll take this plane down if you don't shut up. And these guys were like, you know what? Forget this. If this is going down, we're not going to be, you know, the result of any other mayhem on the ground, on these buildings. So they thus stormed the cockpit area once the hijackers were in there screwing around with the controls, and forced them probably through, a fight or what have you, and it crashed in a field.
In a field, that's right.
So, and you know, if not for that, we very well may be talking about, you know, having to had rebuilt part of the White House, you know, or, you know, and other mass casualties on that front.
Think about that.
Yeah.
You know, having to rebuild the White House. I mean, that's something that's, you just don't think of.
Yeah. So
it's supposed to be there forever.
Right.
Just like the towers.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You know, and, you know, one of the big things too, is that they, you know, they want to say that, you know, these terrorists were, well, you know, we had it coming, you know, it was our arrogance. It was this, it was that. Oh my God. Here he is.
This guy, son of a bitch.
We blow this guy to bits and he's still hanging around here trying to get, you know what? You're gone. Just like they took you out in that foxhole. You're gone. You don't even get a chance to talk. They're big.
I'll tell you something. When they claimed that when they said that, you know, they had taken him out.
Yeah.
For the longest time, a mutual friend of ours and myself, we argued up and down, left and right. For the longest time, I just didn't believe that they actually killed him.
Yeah.
You know, I was just one of those types, not really conspiracy theorists, but I was one of those types that, I don't know, you know, maybe it was
You were a skeptic is what you
said. I was skeptic. Yeah, I was skeptical, very skeptical. And I was just like, he's alive in a cell someplace or what have you. But I think I've come around and, you know, finally,
he was in a cell, like we were holding him in a cell.
Yeah, like he was. Yeah, for something. You know, I don't know why I was thinking that way, but for some reason, I just. Yeah. Okay. For some reason, I just didn't think. Maybe I just didn't believe it after so long. You know, and after coming so close, and then finding out that he was in this. He was supposed to be in Building A. You know, their intelligence that he was in this building, but he was in some other building, you know, maybe right. I'm just thinking that after, for so long and so many near misses, I thought that they might've, you know, it just didn't pan out. But
right.
I guess I'll, you know, I'll assume that they got him.
Well, I'm pretty confident that we did. And now, JP, what is up, my man? Like that avatar? Nice little pup you got there. Florida Jeff in the house. Let's roll. Yeah, well, you know what? Let's. Hey, the phone number is there, Florida Jeff. I know this is a topic that is near and dear to your heart. 224-231-4652. Or I threw the link in the chat. I will do it again this right now for you guys. I will do that. This I don't do this very often, but this is a special kind of topic, so I'll throw it in there again for you guys. If you want to come on and share your thoughts about 9/11, your memories, maybe you want to talk about, as we're getting into it here, how much we've come, or maybe not have come far enough, or maybe even regressed. Maybe regressed is a better word for it, because in my opinion, okay, and this is something I'm going to share. It's an article, okay, so this isn't a video. We're done with the videos here tonight, but this is an article I want to share where a teacher in California, and all things, you know, kind of crazy come out of California for some reason.
Okay. Oh, boy.
Okay. Hangs a F the police, F America poster in the classroom. Okay. And the claim is that law enforcement's primary purpose is to militarily enforce white supremacy and capitalism. Okay. Obviously some parents, and I think any parent would be pushing on the brakes, slamming on the friggin' brakes if this happened, because this is not the type of stuff you want to be talking about with your children when you're just sending them off to school. Okay. It is, there's no reason for that. And it says here that it's saying that another photo showed two posters that read, again, F America, F this native land, and F the police. Okay, I'll be the first one to say this, okay?
Sure, wasn't Ice-T said that? Didn't he say that? F the police?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, that was another brilliant stroke of genius for him to do that. But very simply,
or Ice Cube or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was Ice-T. Yeah. He had the Cop Killer song, which is another brilliant friggin', you know, thing by him to do. But my point being is this, okay, I am not naive to say that this country's history in terms of the past is not checkered in other in aspects here and there. I get it. Okay. But you have to understand that that is what happens when you are nation building. Okay. This nation, you know, is well over 100 years old. Okay. From its infancy to now. Okay. And yes, when the first people came over here, were they killing Native American Indians? Yes. You know, were they displacing them? Yes. Did they do, you know, horrible stuff that they shouldn't be doing? Yes. Okay. But there was a lot of other things that were good that came out of those things. That was not every instance that was going on in America as we moved and expanded westward. Okay. We started here, ironically, in New York and Massachusetts, the northern colonies, and we expanded west and south. Okay. And it was not a fairy tale. Okay. We know that, but it was also not fire and brimstone just laying waste in everybody's path. And I think Franklin, a lot of people tend to want to point to those moments of, you know, craziness in the birth of what is our society and our country as it is today.
Right around now is the time that they start yelling at, what was it in Columbus and all of that. Didn't they just remove a statue? I'm sorry. Did they just remove a guy and his horse in Virginia, I believe it was?
Yep.
And yes, they did. Made a big stink about that.
Yes, they did. And here's the thing. Okay. Newsflash. Okay. Newsflash to you. And I wish I had that. I wish I had that little sound effect for you, but
the Morse code, beep, 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 yeah,
or you know the boom, you know. Oh, that. Yeah. there, I did it. I did my own.
I know that one.
Effect. There you go. I can sell my soundboard. I'll just do sound effects. But the whole thing is, you know, newsflash. That doesn't take away that the person existed. Okay, removing a statue, taking a picture down, omitting facts from a history book do not make it so that it never happened, okay, or that person never existed. Maybe in the small minds of those people that make it their initiative, okay, in their daily goings on to do that and get that done, maybe that has some self-satisfaction for those people, but it doesn't change the fact that those people lived, they had a life, and they had an impact one way or the other. All right?
If you stop and think about that for a minute, you stop and think about Germany, okay? We all know what went on in Germany. There are some people who have actually said, well, why weren't the concentration camps, why weren't they removed? You know, why weren't they torn down to the ground, that type of thing. I've actually seen and been to two of them. And it's pretty somber. I mean, you can't go there, smile on your face, and why, you know, it's somber. It just, there's no way around that. And then I said to myself, geez, you know, and Mike, the tour guide that I was with, I said, are there any statues or any remembrance of Hitler in Germany? And the answer to that is a resounding hell no. That was an agreement. I forget exactly when, but there was an agreement that would not happen. There wouldn't be any of that, not even in no part of Germany. But yet the buildings where all those atrocities took place, they still stand. And that reminds you of what went on.
Right.
Not necessarily of who was in charge, but it reminds you of what went on, Germany and in Poland.
Right. And he speaking of statues, they took away a statue of Teddy Roosevelt on a horseback.
Rough Riders.
And next to him was a Native American man, and they thought that, you know, that was just, oh my God, this is horrible. Can't believe it. Well, you know, that happened. Okay. You know, these Native Americans in some cases were working with them.
Of course.
Okay. In what they were doing. Okay. And they actually had a symbiotic relationship. Okay, in that they weren't enslaved in every aspect and in every way. Okay, quite to the contrary, they weren't. All right, and just because the mere idea of that ruffled people's feathers, that was also taken away. But again, that doesn't mean that it never happened.
Right.
Okay, that relationship didn't happen. That the Rough Riders didn't happen. You know,
obviously what they want is just to, hopefully it's an out of sight, out of mind type of thing. I think that's what people want to happen, but I don't think that's a way of doing it. It's not going to, people who are thirsty for knowledge and people who want to read and want to know about these things are going to go and research it. Okay. You could take down all the statues you want. You could take the, you know, you change the text and history books and things like that. But if you search hard enough, you'll find what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You'll find the information, regardless if it's being taught in a school or any other, you know, institution. It's
right.
It's going to be there. It's just not, you're going to have to search for it. That's what I'm getting at.
Right. No, absolutely. Florida Jeff says, what was the famous line by one of the heroes on that fourth flight before they stormed the cockpit?
Oh, and he wrote up, yeah, let's roll. That's what one of the
that's what he said. Okay. I see.
I think I heard that too. Yeah.
See, again, Florida Jeff is our history aficionado.
He's a historian.
Yes. So we tend to sometimes not be able to catch up with his acronym and his retelling of all the stuff that he has. And he's like a living computer, and we love him for that. That's great. Yeah. Just punch him in there, you know, like, you know, smack him on the back of the head. give me that fact, Jack. Jeff, give me it.
numbers go back and forth, zeros and ones. It comes right up with it.
That was November 4th. okay. Jeremiah Hussmans. I remember. Do you, Jeremiah? Good. If you want to call up and share that memory with us, where you were, how you felt about it. Did it affect you? Maybe it affected, did you know somebody that was involved? Share it with us. Okay. So we already got that. Okay, good. All right. So, yeah. And I want to bring what we're talking about now kind of to the forefront of where we are today. All right. And what I'm getting at here is, where are we now as a country? All right. Because I remember how I felt, and I remember how everybody else felt at, you know, in that day, obviously, but also in the weeks and the months after that. Okay. And we talk about shutdowns and things like that. Now, for other reasons, the city was in fact shut down. You know, it was shut down. It was closed off because they had to take care of things. It had to have some security there. And it was like that. Yeah. And it was like that for a while. But I remember through, it doesn't matter if it was in your neighborhood somewhere, if you were in Manhattan or if you lived on the boroughs there or out on Long Island, you had a feeling of, it was almost a feeling of nationality that came over everybody.
Pride.
Okay. Resilience. Everybody pulling in one direction. And we talk, you know, a lot of politicians out there right now, and a lot of people out there, a lot of talking heads will talk about, oh, we need to have unity, and we have to have everybody be one and treat everybody fairly and everything like that. But here's something, all right, and here's a soundbite for all of you guys. You can't manufacture that, okay? It has to be organic. And what happened on 9/11 is that unity, that pulling in one direction, everybody being an American, that happened organically because of what happened. Okay. And that lasted for a hell of a long time. I mean, I think that lasted for better part of almost a decade, I would say, where people felt good about themselves, felt good about their neighbor, their friends, everybody in America. I think the whole United States kind of took on the personality of the people here in New York. Okay. In terms of, you know, coming together and, you know, it really was, nobody was color. Nobody was their You know, gender ideals were not even a concept back then. Nobody could give a crap, you know, what you thought of yourself. You know, if you thought you were a chick, if you thought you were a guy, if you thought whatever, nobody cared. That wasn't even a thing. And nobody cared if you were homosexual. Nobody cared who the hell you, it wasn't even about that at that point.
It was bigger.
It was bigger. Yeah, you got it. It was bigger than that. All right. And it was like that because it was organic. It was real. All right. What we got now in the United States of America is anything but organic, is anything but real. It is, you know, it is a manufactured indignance, okay, of things. And that is a shame. It is, you know, I think it's a travesty of who we are as Americans, because we can disagree on things. We can be different, okay? You know, just look at my hat. I got my own opinion, and that's fine. But you don't have to demonize the other person with the other point of view, and that happens a lot, okay? And instead of pulling in one direction now, we seem to be actually, we're at a tug of war right now, you know, internally, which is amazing. And only, you see, when you're not pulling in the same direction on the rope and you're doing a tug of war on that rope, the only people that have an advantage are your enemies out there. Okay. The countries that don't like you. Okay. As I said, in Afghanistan,
right,
in Iraq, Iran, China, all these other places that, you know, they may like us with a handshake, but they're, you know, they like to kick us in the butt as we walk, you know, as we walk out the door, you know, that's what's going on here. And what do we got? We got, all right. So I stoked the memory bank of Florida Jeff here. So now he's
climbing. Was it you poked a tiger with a stick?
I did. Sleeping tiger. What was the famous one? Okay.
Well, I did already that got one. That.
All right. Yeah. We got that. My first reaction was sadness, but quickly to anger. I wanted revenge on the bastards that did this. And when we first went over to the Middle East, I was optimistic. But then optimism began to sour since
World War II,
we don't enter wars to win them. We accomplished nothing in Korea, got beaten badly in Vietnam, and utterly embarrassed in Afghanistan. So, okay. So that, yeah. And that's Florida Jeff's opinion.
Don't have the best record is what I think he's trying to say.
I think so. I think that's where he's coming
from. That's about it.
Right. I think that's where he's coming from. And I think what happens nowadays is, again, the idea of not getting, we don't want to get in and get really entrenched. You know, we're trying to fight wars electronically, okay? And sometimes that works. A lot of times it doesn't, okay? Now, I'll say this here right now, that I think it was a good idea that we picked up our tent poles and got out of Afghanistan, all right? It is my opinion that that region, you know, that whole region over there in the Middle East, it is so toxic. We talk about toxic masculinity,
right?
We're talking about they see again over here. We cartoon ideas of toxic stuff, you know, in society, and make it believe that that's really all. Oh, you got to really worry about this, and this is really toxic. No. That's real toxic masculinity over there. That's toxic way of thinking. And it's been like that for centuries. Okay. Well before we ever got over there and started, you know, I believe the idea was we're going to spread democracy to the Middle East. forget about it, guys. Here's a news flash for you. They don't want our democracy over there. They never have. Okay. The little people over there that are, get abused all the time would be very happy to just live their lives, you know, live with their religion, pray, do what they want to do, and they'd love it. And they don't want for anything else. Okay. The problem is they can't even do that because the crazy radical people over there are blowing things up, you know, in the name of craziness. And they're fighting with, you know, the Israelis over there, and they're caught in the middle. And that's never going to change. Unfortunately, I hate being a pessimistic guy on this, and I'm usually not, Franklin. You know this.
It hasn't changed so far, so I'm not 100% sure it's going to.
Right, and I agree, and it's just it's silly, but the way we went about getting out of there, I think, leaves a lot to be desired.
That could have been done a lot better.
Right. Right. Hopefully, we won't have to deal with any other terrorist kind of stuff in the next decade. We'll see. Hopefully, our intelligence in terms of homeland security has gotten mature enough where we now pay attention to things that we were asleep during leading up to 9/11. All right, I'm hopeful for that.
Do you mean people wanting to learn how to fly an airplane, but really weren't interested in learning how to land?
Yeah, I know, right?
That wasn't the tip-off. I mean, I really hope that that wasn't – I hope that that was a mistake and somebody just made that up and people just went with it. But I really hope so because that wasn't a tip-off to anybody. But I guess we weren't in that mindset. Chris, I guess we just weren't in that mindset.
No, I know. I can't believe that. It was just it. And again, there was a lot of things that led up to that. You know,
of course.
It wasn't just one thing. It was a lot.
There were a lot of things. But, I mean, logistically, I've watched specials up to that, and logistically, there was a lot of things that had to be done, and you know, with pretty decent amount of timing and precision, you know, not tapping them on the back or anything, but I mean, it was just, there were just things, the mistakes were made.
Yes.
Mistakes were made. Things weren't thought of. I'll just leave it at that.
That's why these quixotic ventures of nation building were not productive. These are primitive cultures who have not been brought up on ideals of constitutional government, on basic freedoms we take for granted. I think there is a lot to be said in terms of that, Florida Jeff, in terms of what your synopsis is. Jeremy says, I have donated thousands of patriotic posters to the firemen of New York City after. Well, that's great. That is tremendous. That is a great thing you're doing. And thank you for doing that. That's a great thing.
That deserves a hey now, don't you think, Chris?
I think so. Well, you know, no. What that deserves, my friend, is this. There you go. Because that is a tremendous that's a tremendous thing to do. And receive said, wow, very good. Wow, testimonials from God. Wow. Very nice. And you know, we talk about the society as the guys here and you know, who they are and you know, these mamby-pamby type guys out there, and I think a lot of that is reflective to this is a generation that has no idea what happened 20 years ago. You know, they weren't alive. You know, most of them, they were just born. Okay. And now we're flashing forward from, like I said, it was about 8 years of that national pride and it kind of went away. I'll leave the chat and the replay up to comment on what they feel is why it eroded away, or when it started. You can put your comments in there for that. But my point being is that now you have these kids that have no idea, and they're getting inundated with a different kind of education. Okay. Some of which, as I said before, are getting bypassed in their institutions of learning, or they're getting some crazy, pretty much bland washing, I'll call it, of the events of that day. And that is
glossing over, in other words.
Yeah. So let's see, what are we doing here, Jeff? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't take that. Why is Streamlabs doing that still? They seem to truncate, or try to truncate. They give you a reprimand. Stop typing.
Are you paying by the letter?
Like, I don't know.
Paid by the hour. You be what are you paying by the hour? You by
the letter. Jeremy Hoosman says all of the information is on. Oh, okay. So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Go take a look at Jeremy's Facebook page and take a look at that artwork. Take a look at those testimonials. 9/11 changed, as it did a lot of people. And as I said, and as I said before, it definitely changed our outlook as well. Florida Jeff says, I agree. We have no business in Afghanistan anymore, but there was a right way to draw down our troops without leading to needless deaths and the loss of $86 billion of military equipment to the Taliban.
That bothers me as well.
That was a bad thing. And in my opinion, it's one of those things that even if they don't really know how to work things, that's always stuff that they can sell, or they can bribe people to do favors for them.
And I wonder where that's going to go.
Dangerous.
Who would buy any of that stuff?
Oh my goodness. Who?
Did you see some of the members of the Taliban? Okay, they were in formation, and none of them were wearing sandals anymore. None of them had ripped shirts or t-shirts or flip flops on. Okay, they had boots that were for U.S. service people.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The uniform, camouflage. Okay. The weapons. Okay. Yeah. Will somebody get into one of those helicopters after they think they got it put back together? I wouldn't. But that's not the point. There were so many other munitions that can be sold and used against us.
Right. And Franklin, let's just we should actually demand a thank you from the Taliban, because we actually paid for all that stuff. You know, that money comes out of taxpayer funds, and that's great. Boy. So that's another layer of, oh my God, you know. I agree. We have no business. Okay. What happened here? Okay. Let me just say, your messages do get through. It's just that Streamlabs throws up a little warning once you do it, so you don't have to retype it. So I misspoke when I said that. I think it's easy to forget past tragedies. We live so comfortably today that many of us forget all of the past sacrifices that has led to our wealth and our comfort. Very true. Very true, Florida Jeff. It is something that, we do. We take for granted. And we live in a society now that is very isolated in and of themselves. You know, again, we have those old episodes. You can go back and check it out about, we talk about the incels and the guys that just, they don't care about anything. They have no drive. And yeah, we live in a society and many areas of this country where that is the case.
Jeff tied a ribbon on the end of his last passage.
Oh, you did. Okay, here we go. We're too busy worrying about whether. Oh my God. Oh, there we go. And thankfully, Florida Jeff brings us our first
hey now
of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Nice. We okay. You see, now we've taken the turn into we were reverent and now we are irreverent. We're right back on course on this program. I did want to say we're talking about this is the conversation, Franklin, is just flowing tremendous tonight.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even have a segue. This is great. I don't even have to segue to any of the stuff I have planned.
It's being done for you.
It is. It's been done. And speaking of Afghanistan over there, the women, okay, and here's something for the maybe one or two feminist girls out there that watch this program. This is something that should perk your ears up, okay? Women over in Afghanistan right now are basically the lower caste in the caste system that they're putting in place. Okay. They are, and I'm not even joking. This is not even a joke. They are in danger for their lives because they were living a liberated kind of lifestyle where they didn't have to cover their face up. They were, you know, reading, they were going to school. Now you got to understand something in the Islamic culture that they're implementing over there, where they implement what is called Sharia law, they cannot go to school. It is frowned upon for a woman to have an education. All right. And they were doing that. They were going to school. They were getting degrees. They were probably doing a lot of the online stuff, but they were doing this. They were becoming teachers. And that's all pretty much gone. Now they're letting women, and I'll share this up right now, this article, they are letting them, do things. Okay. They are letting them, here it is. They are letting them teach, but here it is. Women fight the Taliban hijab mandate by posting pictures of colorful dresses on social media. So they're not even supposed to wear different kind of colors, ladies and gentlemen. They're supposed to probably be in all black and that's it, just basic. These ladies are basically saying, forget that. This is what we're going to do. Now, let me just read this part because this is very important. Okay. Ever since the Taliban took over in the country, Afghans around the world have been speaking out against them. Women especially have been protesting the new hijab mandate in schools. Okay. On social media, they have been posting photos of themselves wearing colorful traditional dresses, which are not hijab, in an effort to tell the world about the glorious Afghan culture. Okay. This picture right here. Okay. Hopefully you guys can see that. And let's see if I can I actually blow that up? Is this going to...
Chris, if I may.
Yes.
Have you ever actually seen here the full hijab, head to toe, veil, everything?
In this country.
Yes. Have I seen it? I'm sorry.
Yes. Yes, I have.
Yeah, the very first time I saw that, I was getting off a plane, and I was actually in London, England, and it was very, very unnerving once I got used. I mean, before I got used to it, it was very unnerving because I had never seen that before.
Mm.
But, Ken, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'll tell you this. I kind of like the whole aspect of, like, the ceremonial, like, wrap-up garb like that, because it's like, it's almost like Christmas, you know? You know, you kind of walk in there and, you know, maybe you have the mood lighting in the bedroom there and slowly unwrap her, you know? It's like a nice present.
Cue the Barry White.
You know? So there you go. You can just...
Oh, my.
So,
George. What's your show about, George?
That could be my disgusting infidel Western coming out in me. So, but in all seriousness, this is horrible because this is what they're back to now. In these classrooms, they have to sit there, completely, literally, just totally in disguise. It's just crazy, and it's called a burqa when they're all dressed up in the everything like this. I mean, are you serious right now? This is just crazy.
Gloves on. That's a burqa.
Somebody here says hashtag early Halloween.
Oh boy.
Hey now.
Oh man. Oh boy. But this is a traditional dress that this girl is wearing. So again, and here's the problem, because eventually, okay, this is not gonna fly with them, okay? And what's gonna happen is this, okay?
The only thing that's gonna fly is their heads when they get chopped off.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. And here we go. I mean, they're now being accused of murdering a pregnant Afghan policewoman in front of her family. So there is no room for negotiation over there. Again, she was put to death in central Afghanistan province of Ghor. And this concerns people because it's a repression of women under their rule. Again, this is a picture of her. The victim name was Nagar Masmouni. So she worked at a prison there and was 8 months pregnant when she died.
Oh.
So that's just crazy. And that just illustrates, ladies and gentlemen, what is going on over there in terms of women. And what I want to know is where are all the people in this society here that, quack about women's rights here, okay, and hold up those little signs like free our girls, and anytime somebody gets kidnapped, where are they now? Well, where are they speaking out, coming on camera, going on the respective news outlets and saying, hey, what the heck is going on over there? Stop. They seem silent, and I don't understand it. They're so quick to get galvanized and march down, First Avenue, in the city, in various costumes for trivial stuff, in my opinion. But here you got real stuff going on, and they seem not to care.
Mum's the word. They keep quiet about that. They keep mum.
Yeah. There's a real war on women in Afghanistan, but women's soccer is being oppressed because they can't get equal pay. That's so true. Oh, man. Oh, you got that right. You got that right. So much.
Yeah!
Absolutely. And where are the feminists here in America getting on Joe Biden and the Democrats? I think... they and all politics, this is like when you're in T-ball and you got the thing right there and all you got to do is swing and hit the ball. It's not even being pitched. So this is a perfect thing that they can do to, even, and they love to do things for aesthetics. They can do, this is a perfect aesthetic thing to do.
Biden was too busy making sure Larry Elder didn't become governor of California.
I know. That was the big thing. God forbid they get a different person in to be governor, and it's from the other side of the aisle. Oh my gosh!
Did you did you, what was it? I noticed a little off of what we were talking, a little sure. off the track, but I thought I read Larry Elder was being called a white supremacist from Compton. Right. And I said, what was there, a proofreader out on vacation or something?
Yeah.
You know, really? A white supremacist from Compton.
Oh,
you couldn't make that up.
That is just nuts. I mean, that is absolutely crazy. A white supremacist. I mean,
a black supremacist from Compton. Really?
I mean,
hello.
You can't even do that.
Can't make it up.
Oh my God. But you know, it's. I mean, and how do you feel if that guy? Not only does the guy lose, right, but he has to take getting stuff thrown at him from a chick in a gorilla, gorilla mask.
And that person, I mean, if anything, I would have fired his security.
Oh okay? Yeah,
I would have fired his security.
Mm.
Really, she was. I don't believe the woman was arrested or reprimanded or. Whatever, you know, I don't think any of that was, if that had been the other way around.
Oh, forget it.
Forget it. You know what I mean? Yeah. But yeah, since she threw an egg at him and, you know, I know. And it was another person that was saying that, well, he shouldn't be in this part of town if he's not going to help us. Okay.
And now what isn't that the definition of like segregation and racism.
Yeah. So what did he do?
Somebody, your kind. Get out of here. Your kind isn't.
So he went back to a safe area to where, you know, people, you know, that were with him, where he felt safe.
People that look like him.
No, actually, they weren't people that looked like him. They were melanin challenged, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh my God! You know, it, again. How far have we come?
Yeah.
Not that far.
Maybe not so much.
You know, yeah, so not so far. Not that so far. Much. Oh, my God. But I did want to hit this. I got to get to this one segment here, this one article, because it did make the rounds here in the Manosphere, and I got to touch in. Oh, yeah, I got to touch on it.
All right.
And it turns out here, Franklin, that on Tinder, girls are getting, they might be desperate, but it also might be maybe ingenious in terms of hedging their bets for the time
really?
That they invest on a date. So in this case, a girlfriend draws up a 17-page contract for a Tinder flame after they have dated for 2 weeks.
She must be a law student. Nobody has that kind of time.
So for 2 weeks, he goes out with this girl, and she basically is saying it's a modern-day Rachel Green, and they're definitely not on a break. Annie Wright, 21, drafted a 17-page relationship contract after dating her new boyfriend for only 2 weeks, okay? And let me just bring this up and get this going.
Good, thank you.
Yes, and I'll also take the thing down here. Okay, so basically, she's been dating this guy for 2 weeks, and the contract came with four main objectives: honesty, communication, awareness of partner's needs, and the clarity and alignment of their intentions. Okay.
Yeah, she's paving the way, huh?
Oh, yeah. She's leaving nothing unturned here. So I made the idea as a joke. Then he said, no, seriously, we can do that and talk about it. So this dude co-signed on this. All right. And here they are, the happy couple, I guess.
That's a weird photo. He's just as pretty as she is.
Ugh. I know. They drew up the contract and they've been together ever since. The couple met last October on Tinder after Wright left a toxic relationship. Oh, She was in a toxic relationship, ladies and gentlemen, and she was determined not to make this relationship with Head, a law student, work out. His name is Head.
Yeah,
boy. Oh my God.
Oh my.
Oh my. Head.
He's the law student, or she is? I'm sorry.
I think he's the law student. Okay. So here she is. Okay. At the time, I had braces in college and was very embarrassed. I was also very, it was also pandemic time, but I got to the point where I was like, screw it. I'm going to go on dates with guys and I don't care anymore. So she said, COVID be damned. I will get out there and get mine, which is, you know, that's going to happen. Chicks are not going to. They're not going to let COVID get in their way of, getting on the CC.
Yep.
I match with almost anybody on Tinder and would tell my matches, I'm going on a walk with my dog at 2 p.m. today. Are you free? It was a fluke that I met him. I was going on 3 Tinder dates a week and to go out there and meet people. Yeah, so she, you know, like a regular chick, she was out there pretty much dating 3 or 4 guys at a time, okay? And this guy checked all the boxes, okay?
He checked all the boxes, did he?
Yeah, which I guess was written up in her contract.
Okay. Contract.
Oh, my God. She outlined all of her expectations for a relationship, which asked Head for no silent treatment, to pay for date nights, and to not isolate her from her loved ones.
To pay for date nights?
Pay for dates. She doesn't want. She basically wants to get taken care of, is what it is.
That's
so,
what it sounds like. I'd love to see that contract just for the heck of it. I don't think contracts to buy a house are that long.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let me tell you what went on with this chick before was that she was paying for stuff, okay? Or maybe it was like a 50-50 deal and she wasn't liking it. Okay? She was like, "Wait a second, you know, I only make so much as, you know, a beautician or, you know, when I choose to work part-time at Starbucks. This is not going to work out." So, my big question to you, Franklin, is in this whole thing, you know, this whole time they've been together, is Head getting the head?
Hey now.
You know what? That's a really good question. And I'd probably have to say no. I'll bet somewhere in that Declaration of Independence that she drew up, there are probably rules against that as well. You know?
I think you're right. I think there might be something about intimacy in there. Let's see if there is. Let's see if we read a little bit further if we get to that.
We gotta find this contract. I have to read it.
She says, "I felt the biggest issue I had in my last relationship was I felt like boundaries of mine were crossed and were never established." Oh my God!
Hey, I said don't, and he did it anyhow.
Yeah, I know. But like, what are those boundaries? Like, what was that? I think I know. It was the back door. That's what it was.
Yeah, that was one of them I was thinking.
She thought it was just like, I like doggy style. I like that old thing.
Oh my!
That's not what happened.
No, that's not what happened at all.
So she was, so she basically said no to that. So here he is. Okay, so here's a professional picture of them here.
They all look right. Comfortable.
I mean, they look, you know, they look like they're, you know, they're a match here, you know, I would say. She's got a decent body here, I won't say, you know, we'll do a little plower pass on her right here. The body's, you know, she's got a decent body here. You know, face is a little, you know.
Nah, man, dude, that ain't cool.
What?
That ain't cool, man. You can't.
I know, yo. Not cool, dude.
That's not cool. Those are the boundaries that she was just complaining about.
Right.
you done crossed all of them in about 4 seconds.
I did. But you know what?
You didn't get to page 16 of that.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm the type of guy that this girl would be DMing, okay, when Head is over there doing a late night at his lawyers club, you know, young lawyers journaling club.
He's probably washing her clothes right now.
My God. I could only imagine. I could only imagine
what he's allowed to do.
Honey, is it okay if I can I touch your leg? Can I touch your leg if I do that?
Oh boy.
Are you going to wear that little lingerie I bought you? I went to Victoria's Secret and I got you something.
Just because you asked, no, I'm not.
Do you want to see it, honey?
I'm not allowing you to wear it.
Oh my God. So here we go. We treat our relationship like almost a business interaction. Right. We deal with conflict like partners in a business would. We sit down and treat it like we're partners in life, and love is our added bonus.
Oh boy.
What the hell is this chick serious right now?
You know what? It seems to be working for him. And right now, to tell you the truth, the only thing I'd want out of either one of them is that dog. It's a beautiful dog.
That is a nice dog.
I love boxing.
Well, I will say that. That dog is nice. Listen, you know, I mean, this is just... let's see.
It's working for her, I guess. And you know what? You know the bad part about this, Chris? If this works for her, I wonder how soon it's going to do for other chicks try the same.
Oh God, I can only imagine. And here's what you need. Wright joked that her boyfriend will want to add a clause or two of his own, including taking off shoes in his apartment, which she always forgets to do. And with that, I say,
ha! Gay!
All right.
So how long is it going to be before other chicks try this stunt? I'm sorry. I word stunt. I didn't mean the other word.
I know. This is just nuts. And there's a lot left to be desired with a Head over there, you know, which I think he could have parlayed that name instead of like having it be like an albatross and something like really bad for him in life. He could have made that like into like the best thing for him. Yeah. Like he could have got a lot of girls with Head, you know, like the name like Head. He could have been like, look, you know, that's my name because that's what I'm all about, baby. You know, like
that's what I'm all about.
You know, like something like that. You know, like make it, you know, just go out there and just, you know, start throwing lines like that out. And, you know, but again, no, this guy's probably a stuff like, you know, Harvard type of guy, you know, stuffed shirt. You know, he clearly has no, you know, balls. Okay.
He used to have them, but she has them now in her purse.
And how bad do you got to be in terms of a dude to want to be in a relationship to agree to something like that? I mean, who would, if anything, that contract should be for her. Okay. And maybe I'll do this next week. I'll come up with a contract that I would give the Head's chick over there.
You know what? You should come up for next week. Try to get one or both of them on and get a copy of that agreement. Again, I'm still on this. I'm going to look for this to see if I can find it online somewhere, but I have to know what that agreement says.
I'm sure we can find it somewhere. And
it's got to be around.
Maybe that'll be your homework, Franklin.
All right, I'll see if I can find it.
You can try to find the contract and we'll go through it a little bit more and I will do some homework too. And I will make up my own contract for the girl. Okay. And we'll see if my like deal breakers are any different than her deal breakers. I think they're going to be.
But I think your contract can just be one sheet of paper. Shut up. Uh-oh. Red Sings the Blues is in the house.
cook and be naked.
There you go. And not in that order.
Yes, yes, he is. He is in the house there. We'll get to him in a second. I think we're... what is the Florida? If he's still going out with this chick, he's definitely a soy boy. He probably is. That's probably a good characteristic for that guy. Oh, my God. And Red Sings the Blues. Sup, guys? It's been a rough month. My channel, but I'm still, of course, hey, that's all right, man. And I talk to a lot of content creators out there off camera and off hours. And I'm going to be talking to Red. You know, we always like to brainstorm and throw things out there with one another. And we'll get to that. But hey, dude, I mean, we have the same crap, and Reds have a lot more success than we have in terms of viewership and building audience. But hey, it's, you know, it ebb and flows. It goes up and down. And the biggest thing that you can do, okay, as a content creator, is talk about things that you like to talk about. Right. That's one of the things that I've learned in the 2 years of doing this. It's not about, you know, getting a billion subscribers. It's not about all, you know, all that stuff. It's about talking about what you want, getting guests that you want on that you find interesting and the audience can find interesting and learn something about. That's what really matters. Okay. All the other histrionics and the other stuff. And, you know, when you get really, really big, we've seen that in some of our comrades out there. When you get really big, sometimes there's a lot of big problems that you got to deal with when you get to that level. And, you know, and we see even with the ultimate with Joe Rogan, you know, you're at his level. I mean, everything you say is parsed and looked at. You know, it's almost like you can't even have an opinion. You know, we do this. Everybody does this with the guise of, oh, I'm going to make it big and people are going to be watching me and my audience. And, you know, I'm going to be, you know, somebody real on YouTube and in multimedia. You know, be careful what you wish for, because once you get to that point,
it's a lot of work.
Everybody's going to be listening to you, pal. And, you know, something that you might have said as a one-off, as a joke, is going to be taken out of context. And then all of a sudden, boom, you know, you're getting flagged, you're getting censored, and, you know, people are saying, you got to apologize. What?
Demonetized. Then you got to find your own server. So that way you don't have to worry about being, you know.
Exactly. And we know a lot of guys that have had to go that route because what they said was so, you know, against the grain, as we'll say it, that they had to do that. But Red, we're glad you're here. Obviously you'll have to watch the replay because we're literally just about, and I was just about to say that, my final thoughts here, on this were, just that, sometimes in life you can say that you wish you had, you know, that hadn't happened to you. You wish that you hadn't gone through that. When it comes to 9/11 and it comes to that whole time period, I'm kind of glad that I lived through it and was able to live through it. You know, that I wasn't, God forbid, one of those people that lost their life that day. So I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful that nobody I knew intimately in my family were affected that way.
That was my next question, Chris. I didn't ask if you actually knew somebody who perished. I actually knew one of the firemen, two of the firemen.
Okay.
That was in my old department.
Okay. So that's even more for you to take on. Yep. God bless them. But having lived through that and been able to live through that, my perspective on life and how I view myself in it had changed. And has changed. And I think it's changed for the better. And I hope that people that have lived through that as I did and we did, take that as a growing thing. And maybe with the 20th anniversary year, can look back and maybe reflect and get to that point where they say, you know what, I am going to look at things differently. I'm going to care about those things that should be cared about, and maybe not care and focus on those things that really don't, that are trivial. So I think that's where I'm at with that. Florida just says, Von Erich, can I close with a quote from the great Rod Sterling in regards to what Franklin mentioned earlier about why we should not tear down the past? Go for it. Go for it. Type that up, and we'll put that up there. And Franklin, while he's doing that, Franklin, what did you want to say?
Just two words, basically. The same words that we've been hearing all week. Is never forget. Is never forget. These are the two words I've been hearing all week. And one thing I have noticed, Chris, and I only heard one person.
The two words that I want to leave with people.
There you go.
Jack and evac there, guys. Do it. I know. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. What I was saying is I only heard of one person who was generally embarrassed, who the 9/11 slipped past her and was asking, what's with all the flags? Now, instead of jumping down this person's throat, said, oh, it's, 9/11. And she felt generally embarrassed, So that's the reason I say never forget.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Forget and do not forget those who basically gave the ultimate sacrifice.
Right. And what we'll do is we'll finish off on reading Florida Jeff's comment here.
All right.
The Dykus, the Belsons, the Bolshenwalls, the Auschwitzes, all of them. They must remain standing because they are a monument to a moment in time when some men decided to turn the earth. Reason, their logic, their knowledge, but worst of all, their conscience. And the moment we forget this, the moment we cease to be haunted by its remembrance, then we become the gravediggers, something to dwell on and to remember, not only in the twilight zone, but wherever men walk God's earth. Mm. I should have said that in his voice, something to dwell on. We remember only in the twilight zone. They must remain standing because they are monuments. They are a monument to the moment in time when some men decided to turn. Oh, he corrected himself. You screwed your own thing up. Florida Jeff, I was trying to give you a thing. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, we got the idea. Tremendous man. Okay. And tremendous series. Love the Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, I want to thank everybody in the chat for contributing tonight. I want to thank the caller, Carl, earlier tonight. I want to thank everybody that's going to watch this on the replay. And I want to thank you, Franklin, for being here. All right. On that note, everybody, please, when society is crazy, just remember that we're not, and we're not going to let you know or be hoodwinked by the things that are false out there. We're always going to look for the truth under the red lens. Okay. And good night.